For Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson. Welcome to the Friday News Feedbag. This is something that takes place every Friday here on your Discovery News audio podcast. Joining us, as always, Discovery News reporters James Williams and Jorge Ribas. Fellas, what's happening?
Not much. How are you doing, Will?
Doing great.
How was your vacation?
It was fun. Yeah. It was great. Yeah, and I understood while I'm gone that you guys continued with the feedback.
Yeah, we did. The big question I think everybody wants to know is, were you on a beach having Mai Tais?
I heard you comment on that. No, I wasn't, actually, and I can't reveal actually where I was. I like to keep my personal life personal.
I'll just say this. It's not a vacation, then.
Maybe so.
You got to have those Mai Tais, man.
Next time, I'll do it.
I've never.
You basically spent most of feedback just making fun of you.
I've never actually had a Mai Tai either.
Well, in my absence, you guys definitely took the opportunity to, I don't know, are you trying to get rid of me?
Yeah, no.
No.
There's a lot of science out there, so we just wanted to continue dropping science.
It's true. I really don't do much other than sort of introduce you guys. So here's what happened, just to explain to our new listeners, and our older listeners can just bear with us for a second. Every week, what we usually do is James and Jorge bring us three stories each. We have a guest judge in the studio to then choose their favorite story of the week based on nothing other than their own likes, dislikes, etc. Last week, in my absence, James and Jorge asked our listeners to actually email in and tell us their favorite story, why, and what we've done is sort of put together a tally, I guess, of what the favorite story was. And I think we're going to continue doing this because we got so many responses. We actually talked to a few listeners on the phone as well. And, I mean, guys, don't you think it went well?
Yeah, really well.
Yeah.
All right. Let me recap quickly for anyone who didn't listen last week. You guys both brought us three stories. As I mentioned, Jorge bringing us a story about technology with chip cooling potential for future computers. He also talked about the question of, do Latinos identify with white or a whole new different ethnicity? And then thirdly, memories you want to forget are hardest to lose. Is that about right, Jorge?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. And then James brought us three stories as well. First one, why it's tough to distinguish faces of other social groups. Right, James?
Yeah, like other social groups, like other races, that sort of thing.
Okay. Secondly, a battery made from paper that can actually be printed out like a battery press. And then thirdly, antibacterial soap may not be so different after all.
Mm-hmm.
More or less, that's the stories, right?
Yep.
Okay, so those were the stories. Again, we reached out to our listeners and asked them to email us at pod_cast@discovery.com. And we got a lot of responses. But first of all, I'm going to play a few of our listeners we actually talked to, what they chose and why.
My name is David from Pacific Grove, and I voted for the story about the antibacterial soap. And I thought that one was just really interesting because it seems that we wage a war on antibacterials on bacteria all the time. And we're always putting it into animals in every which place. And it doesn't seem like we necessarily always need those. And so it seems like now we're kind of reaping what we sow and seeing that the bacteria are going to be resistant to everything. And it turns out that maybe the antibacterias we use don't really do much in the first place. So that's why I voted for that one.
This is Charles in Louisville, Colorado, and I chose the paper battery story. It was a little bit of a toss-up between that and the facial feature recognition story, but I went with the one that I think has the potential to have a significant impact on everyday life because currently batteries are very expensive, toxic, and pretty heavy, too. So the ability to print those on paper, I think, is pretty cool.
I'm Lori from Bremerton, Washington, and I like the soap story best because my kids always make me buy antibacterial soap, and and for years I've been telling them, soap is soap, so you helped me win a little bit of a soap battle. And what I'd really like now is for you to come up with some scientific explanation of why it's bad to leave dirty dishes in the sink, and you guys will be my heroes.
You know, what was her name?
Lori. Okay. Lori from Washington State.
Lori from Washington State. I want you to know, I looked around this week to see if there were any breaking dish news science things going on, and I couldn't find anything that was really current. But just so you know, I'm looking.
When you say breaking there, you mean like breaking news, right?
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
That's what I meant. Right. That wasn't meant to be a pun.
All right, so again, a few of our listeners there who we actually called and reached out to this week. We will actually have an 800 number for people to call in for next week as well. And then a few of the emails that people sent in for votes. We heard from Darren, who wrote he votes for Jorge's story on ionic wind engines. He writes that he loves the idea of getting his laptop cooler as it runs hot all the time and keeps destroying external cooling mats. Sounds like a problem. Sean wrote in, James and Jorge, let me first say that I thoroughly enjoy your weekly podcast. Since it is Listener's Week, I'd like to tell you which one I like the most. He says, the two most interesting to me were about the Latinos trying to identify themselves as a separate race and also the bacterial soap story. And he finally went with the Latino story, Jorge's story. However, when it all came down to the end, we definitely received the lion's share of votes were for the battery story.
So that's a
James story, right?
That is, yep. Wow, thank you, everybody. Oh,
was it like a significant number of votes?
It was extraordinarily lopsided, Jorge.
Are we talking like 1984 Reagan versus Mondale?
I don't recall the exact percentage on that election, but yeah, it was pretty brutal. So our first listener vote ever, again, James with the win, that brings the tally, I believe, 9-7?
No, 9-8.
Ooh, 9-8. So James
it's heating up.
James's stories have been picked 8 times, Jorge's has been picked 9 times, and now our listeners have a say in this whole thing. So let's jump right into this week, guys. We took enough time doing that, and we'll figure out how to make it even smoother and nicer next week. Again, 3 stories from James, 3 stories from Jorge. You guys, listeners, get to pick and email us and also call us with your pick, and we'll tell you who wins next week. James, start it off.
My first story comes from the journal Angewandte Chemie. It was written by a British researcher from the University of Cambridge, and I almost passed over the story, but then I was thinking about it, and it's actually a pretty big deal. This guy has found a natural compound that stops predatory insects from feeding. It's called azadiractin, and I think I'm saying that right. That compound name, right?
Yes, but you're right.
It inhibits the development of larvae in a broad spectrum of destructive insects, but it's harmless to mammals and other beneficial insects like bees and ladybugs. And I mean, what this? It's a natural insecticide. For 22 years, they've been trying to get this compound to be able to, I guess, like be reproduced in a lab. They haven't been able to do it. They've known the structure of the molecule since 1985. They've been trying to get it, and they finally just got it. And I think what this could do is open the door to a natural insecticide. And when you think about it, insecticides are, you hear about them all the time, how dangerous they are to people, to kids, that sort of thing. And if this is right, then they'll have this insecticide that won't harm mammals.
So
I think that's huge.
Jorge?
That is huge. What falls under, what's a predatory insect? Did you say like a predatory insect is like a did you say a ladybug is a predator?
No. It doesn't hurt the ladybugs and the bees and all that.
So it'd be kind of like, for example, the Asian long-thorn beetle or something like that that.
What about mosquitoes?
I don't, you know what, they don't get into those details in this thing.
What about?
Do a little more. Do
what
little
about
more.
Mosquitoes?
I don't know.
So your 3 minutes of research before the feedback
did not yield specific names of bugs, other than they make bees and ladybugs happy.
All right, get back to us. Let's take it over to Jorge for his first story of the week.
Okay, this one has to do with reintroducing the American chestnut tree, and comes out of Purdue University in the journal Biological Conservation. And what I found out, and I found this out before, and it makes me so sad, is that the American chestnut tree is basically extinct in North America, and it was wiped out in the early 1900s by a fungus from Asia. And so what we have now when you have chestnut trees is actually Asian chestnut trees. And researchers have developed a breed of chestnut tree that could be resistant to this blight that pretty much wiped out the population of these trees. And what they did is they basically took the Asian chestnut tree and through, you know, hybridization and genetics have combined it with the genetic material of the American chestnut to produce a tree that's 6% Asian chestnut, 94% American chestnut. And the tree ends up being resistant to this blight. And this blight, basically, a tree will start growing. And what's interesting is that the roots of these old trees that died still exist. And you'll have, like, these saplings that grow out of the root system. But once they reach a certain, like a year or two old, they die immediately from this blight. So what they're hoping is to reintroduce this tree that's basically almost an American chestnut tree back into neighborhoods. And these trees used to line like neighborhoods and cities, and we don't have them anymore.
So. You know what this sounds like to me? It sounds like a botanist version of Jurassic Park, right? Because is it like Jurassic Park? They were like 90 whatever percent extinct dinosaur with just a little bit of
Right, of a, like a frog.
Yeah,
but
it's going to be a great
chances
movie.
Chances of an American chestnut tree eating you while you're sitting on the toilet are slight.
Yeah. Can you imagine a summer blockbuster about the American chestnut?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, this American chestnut running around.
I thought we lost the American chestnut because we had roasted too many of them on an open fire.
Sorry. But I guess one of the controversies is whether reintroducing these trees, if we're doing so, if it's actually just a whole new species, and then whether or not like they have to kind of circumvent some laws in terms of replanting these things in their natural habitat, which were the Appalachian Mountains and like the Ozarks and things like that.
All right. Okay, good story. Let's take it back over to James for his second story of the week.
Okay, my second story was reported at the 234th National Meeting of the American Chemical Society.
Wait. Is that an annual meeting?
Yeah, I guess.
They've been meeting for 234 years, the Chemical
American Society. American Chemical Society.
It's a national meeting.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know.
Is that impossible?
How old is the U.S.?
Wait, you know what? The U.S. is
1776, right?
34 years old. They've been meeting, I guess,
since like the first, like maybe the first meeting was actually where they signed the Declaration.
Was there even chemistry back then?
All right, so I mean, yeah, maybe it's not annual.
I don't know.
Maybe it's monthly.
I kind of hope it is.
It must be monthly.
You know what? I'm going to find out.
Yeah, if you could look into that.
And maybe I can even get a rep from them to tell us.
That'd be great for next week. Okay.
Anyway, at this last meeting they had, they are looking at fighting emerging infections using computers. And it's called a thing called repurposing or drug repurposing or reprofiling. And that concept is not new. And that's where you basically take a drug that is... it's intended for one use, but you find that it can be used for something else, right? What they're looking at is getting a computer that will, like, let's say a new pathogen comes on the market, like all of a sudden, you know, like you had that drug-resistant TB, something that's completely drug-resistant or some biological weapon. What this computer will do is identify the vulnerable cellular components of that pathogen and then enter that into a database, and then it'll run that information against all of the known drugs that we have and all the different compounds in our current drugs and make a match to find out which ones that we are already in existence will likely be the most effective against these emerging pathogens. And by doing that, it could be like a first wall of defense against containing some of these pathogens before they get out of control.
Maybe it said the 23rd meeting. Maybe you added a number.
No,
it says right here. It says 234.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it could have been going on.
Could be.
I love how this
could
is
be twice a year.
About. It could have been going on before we even like signed the Constitution.
They say that like there are many non-antibiotic drugs that actually have antibiotic like properties. So it's kind of cool that they're basically, it's not recycling, but it's like, you know, using what you already got, and before going through all these other things, it's like focus on just stopping this thing, find something that we've already got, plug it in, and then they can work on, you know, creating something specifically for those threats.
All right, cool. Well, let's take it back over to Jorge for his second story.
Okay, mine also comes out of the 234th meeting of the American Chemical Society. This one from some researchers at Oregon State University and the University of Washington, where they found that...
Wait, does it really come from there?
What's that?
It really is coming from that meeting?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
For real.
They get a lot done there, Will.
They do. I mean, they've been doing it for 234 years.
I think that, yeah.
I hope they have their agenda down. So this comes out of Oregon State University and the University of Washington, where researchers are using an experimental approach in tracking drug abuse through urine and other excrement flushed down sewage treatment plants. So basically, you know, you go to the bathroom, whatever. The drugs that you use, alcohol, whatever else, goes through the system, and they're using something called tandem mass spectrometry, which has been around, and they're using it to gather the unique byproducts of various drugs, cocaine, marijuana, alcohol, methamphetamine, and to use it to track, you know, where certain areas might be more prevalent in drug use, I guess. And they're hoping that, you know, this could improve upon the way that we track drug use now, which is basically surveys, you know, and really, people, I mean, I don't know, people are going to lie in surveys about how many drugs they're using. So this is a way for cities to track, and maybe even law enforcement, to track where there might be more areas of prevalent drug use.
So it's like a urine test just in the sewage.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to come to your house and do it, but they'll do it later on. And I think I
Sounds like Big Brother.
Yeah, so I mean, it's something that they're hoping to, and I don't know whether they would turn these records over to law enforcement officials. Like, for example, if there's a town and they're seeing a spike in cocaine use, you know, through the sewage system, if they're like thinking that maybe there's, you know, a cocaine ring running out of this town, but it's, I guess, something that they would consider.
Huh.
And I don't even know if they're going to, like, you know, if you're in a situation, like, I was thinking of the movie Goodfellas, where they just dump, like, a bunch of cocaine down the toilet because the FBI are against them, if that would, like, totally spike up there.
Yeah, it seems like it's rife with problems like that.
Right.
Still interesting. And I just looked online. Apparently, they meet twice a year.
Oh, they
do.
Yeah, I just went to their future meetings are coming up. They have two scheduled for OA.
Yeah, so they're not that
So we'll just cut that in half. They've still been around a long time, though.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Jorge, what was your story about?
All right, James, let's take you back for your third and final story.
Okay. This one is my favorite story. These researchers from Ohio State University have just figured out how to make a more efficient battery using cows. And, like, I didn't know that we were even using cows to make batteries, but they use this fluid in the cow's rumen, which is the largest chamber of a cow's stomach, and they use the fluid in there, and they mix it with cellulose, and the energy that's produced as the bacteria breaks down that cellulose it creates electricity for a fuel cell. But the thing that I thought was so interesting about this study is that if you look at what we've done to cows so far, they don't resemble anything like their earliest relatives were. So we've completely stripped them of their original identity. We kill them and eat their meat, and if we don't do that, then we make them sit around and give us milk all day. We tip them as recreation. We ride them as, like, you know, like as something else to do, and now we're making batteries out of them. And everybody's always talking about how scary the world would be if the robots and the monkeys took over, but I put forth to you, we should be more worried about cows taking over because they have the longest list of grievances.
My goodness. Jorge, thoughts?
I don't think we're doing enough.
You think there's more we can do with cows?
I'll be quite honest.
Well,
yeah.
James, didn't you bring us a story about cows in New Zealand, how some had light, what was it?
That they were breeding them to, they found the cows that would make natural skim milk, so they're breeding them for that. That's what I mean, man. Like, we are so owning these cows.
All right.
Now, but, you know, now in all seriousness, it's a pretty interesting thing to be making batteries out of cellulite because it's, like, one of the most abundant resources on the planet. And at the moment, these batteries can, this is how powerful they are, they can run a miniature Christmas light, tree light bulb. But
doesn't sound like much.
But they're working on it. It's a new technology, but they're encouraged because...
Do they just stick the light bulb, like, in the cow's mouth?
No, they use the battery that they make out of this cow's, fluid. But they...
Can't like a hamster in a wheel create...
A cow
like light up a whole tree, probably?
Well, no, but here's the thing. This technology's only been around for 2 years. In other words, they've only figured out how to use cows in a different way for 2 years.
Right.
But down the road, you know, they've come this far in 2 years, so who knows, in like
maybe
10 years.
Maybe five lights.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it'll be way more than that. It'll be like a whole tree.
James, did you just figure if you mentioned the word battery that you would win again?
No, you know what? I wasn't even thinking that. I was so fixated on cows.
Okay.
I'm a bovinist.
Apparently. Jorge, let's take it back to you for your third and final story.
I don't even know what that means. Okay, so this one comes out of Northwestern University, and it pretty much confirms, I think, what we all kind of think, that people who think that a breakup is going to be like the end of the world to them is really not that bad. And they actually did a study on this, and this is in the Journal of Experimental Social Psychology, where they asked people who were dating to talk about the forecasted distress before they broke up, and then to talk about the distress after they broke up. And the forecasted distress was always like this end of the world scenario where they never get over this, they never love again. And then pretty much the real distress is pale in comparison to the actual forecasted one. And basically what they said is that in anticipating a breakup, people might not take into account the good outcomes that follow a breakup, like being single again, or, you know, maybe you were just in a bad relationship. And I guess what it found is that people who say, you know, people who are, like, in the most in love, you know, feel badly, but they just kind of get over it. I mean, this is almost kind of like, you know, the could be published in the journal of, like, you know, stop whining, you melodramatic teenager.
But it's almost like science saying love doesn't really matter.
Right.
I'll bet those interviews were finally just a hoot.
finally, science disproves love.
Hey, why don't you just be a robot?
I mean, it really says that especially those madly in love do much better and almost immediately following a breakup than they imagined they would. And they gave them these questionnaires to measure this love. The questionnaire also included a measure assessing how much participants are in love. I don't even know how you would ask them that question.
I'm
like,
really,
are you just a little bit in love, or do you, like, really love that person? Or do you just kind of like them?
You know what that says to me is if I ever feel my relationship is going into the skids, the first thing I'm going to do is fall more in love, because it'll be easier when it's over.
Yeah. Wait, well, Jorge, were you saying the people that are more in love than have an easier time, or it's just sort of equal?
I mean, it said the people who expressed themselves as most in love did experience a little more distress over their actual breakups. But,
so be careful, James.
Right.
All right, fine.
But the dreaded loss, the dreadedness of your anticipated loss, I guess, is far less than, like, the actual result of it.
So James, are you really in love with your wife? A little bit? A whole lot?
No, I'm pretty in love with my wife, and I'm not anticipating anything going sour. But you know what sounds like is...
There's more fish in the sea?
No.
What
that is that people who are that madly in love think it's going to be... It's just expectations. Because they're so in love, they think it's going to be that much worse, where someone who's like, doesn't think it's going to be that bad. In other words, like, it's just... They just have bigger expectations.
Right. Or that kind of, like, that part at the beginning when you're first dating someone, I guess, you know, and you, like, you think they're the bee's knees, but then, like, the real relationship starts, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's, like, still pretty good, but I'm I gotta stop talking right now.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's like a minefield.
Yeah. Food for thought from Discovery News reporters James Williams, Jorge Ribas. Thank you guys both for your very professional research and opinions and your three stories this week. Again, I'll recap the stories, and we want to invite our listeners to email us their favorite story and why they chose it. You can base your decision on whatever you want. Maybe you like the story, maybe you like James and you want him to win, whatever. Real quickly, the stories this week, first of all, from Jorge, we heard about challenges, or rather not just challenges remaining in reintroducing the American chestnut, but the fact that they are trying to reintroduce it was sort of the crux of your story, right, Jorge?
Correct.
Okay. Also, Sewage tells the tales about community-wide drug abuse. And finally, breaking up, maybe not as hard as you think it is. And from James, we heard three stories as well. Computers helping chemists to fight emerging infections. And I think we got sidetracked and didn't really even listen to that story because we were amazed by the longevity of the American Chemical Society's annual meetings. Not annual, after all. We also heard about cow-powered fuel cells growing smaller and mightier. And his first story was about a new natural insectoid being found. All right, guys. Great stuff.
Yeah. Thanks.
As always. Do you have any hopes or
hopes and dreams?
Well, for your stories this week, anything think might really resonate?
Well, I just hope that like I said, that cows don't somehow take control.
All right.
I hope that we get a write-in by someone who, like, writes pop songs about breaking up and how hard it is, and just see what they have to say about that.
We look forward to it. And our listeners, again, you're invited to email us pod_cast@discovery.com with your favorite story or any comments or suggestions you might have. And of course, you can correct us if we said something remarkably wrong, and or call us. We have an 800 number, or an 888-890-6339. 888-890-6339. Guys, thanks a lot.
Does that spell anything?
We'll have to figure that out. There's a zero in the 890, so that always... But you can work something out. You know, you can say hi, zero, or whatever.
It's not the same, though.
Yeah, it's not. All right, well, I'll try to get another number. Guys, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next week, and we'll reveal the listener's choice.
All right, thank you, Will.
Thanks,
thank you, listeners.
Talk to you guys later. For Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson.